This episode of the Antlers and Hicks podcast is brought to you by Bloodline Custom Calls. I've been a fan of Bloodline Custom Calls for several years now. I've gotten in touch and gotten a good friendship with Jason Cooper and the boys over at Bloodline, and they make some of the best turkey calls I've heard. They also have some outstanding merchandise, so go check them out. BloodlineCustomCalls.com, Facebook, and Instagram. Check out Bloodline Custom Calls. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. It's coming up on bow season. I'm trying to live a life. I'm trying to run trail cameras, trying to get stands set up. And let me tell you something, it is hectic. That's where the Wise Eye Sail Cam comes in handy from Wise Eye Technology. Guys, this camera is the most innovative camera on the market right now. What the camera will do is it will take a picture of deer and text it to you just like any other sail cam does. But what it also does is it sends a system called Hunt Control, the GPS location of where that picture was taken. Hunt Control then looks at the weather, looks at the lunar phase, looks at the wind, looks at everything, and breaks down when this deer was moving and why. Also, if you have multiple Wise Eye cameras in the field and this particular deer you're after walks past those Wise Eyes, they will take a picture of it, put it in a file folder that all the cameras keep up with. Now you have a folder specifically for that deer. That's right. This camera can pick out the deer that you're targeting. It's got a facial recognition system that it recognizes these deer and charts them. Takes out all the legwork that you have to do, simplifies it, tells you when they're moving, so that gives you the best opportunity to get on top of that target animal. They can be found at hogfathers.com and on amazon.com. They can also be bought in person at K&M Coffee Corks and Camo in the great town of Farmerville, Louisiana, out there on the highway going over on Lake Darby on Highway 33. So go check them out. Wise Eye Trail Cams. You got to check them out. They are impressive. So I got so much content going on, I can give you guys two podcasts in a week, which isn't going to happen very often, I don't believe, but it may. With the Crappie Masters National Championship going on this weekend in Grenada Lake, I really thought it would be, you know, do it justice, I guess you'd say, to talk to a past winner like Chris Fields on Monday. Talked with a guy who will hopefully, I think he will be in the top of the leaderboard coming up this weekend with Wesley Miller, and how the lake is fishing. Man, a lot of good content with this one. I really appreciate Wesley taking time out to talk to us. We had a really good time. I've been friends with Wesley before fishing, scored his deer. You'll hear about that in a little bit. And just really had a good, I mean, he and I hit it off right off the jump. So it's a good time. I want to thank Crappie Masters for what you guys do for, you know, small towns. I know around here in Farmerville, you guys have been a very, very strong presence. And man, we really, really appreciate it here in Union Parish. And anytime we can pump anything Crappie Masters is going to do, we're going to do it. So without further ado, Wesley Miller. Hope you guys enjoy. Well, the guy we got on today, he goes by a few names. I've heard him called Miller. I've heard him called Big Sasquatch, but his mama named him Wesley. How you doing, Wesley Miller?
Man, I'm doing great tonight.
Yeah. So, you know, you and I were talking earlier via text message, and you said you were getting ready for this weekend. Got the big Crappie Masters tournament that's coming up this weekend, huh?
Yes, sir. I've spent the entire day from 5 o'clock this morning trying to get my equipment ready and my boat ready to go out there. I woke up this morning, tied a few jigs I think I'm going to need, and went to Bass Pro Shops, Walmart, and I've just about got everything besides my clothes packed and ready to go.
Well, that's good. So, you know, Wesley, we see you on social media. You have a very, I gotta hand it to you, you have a very strong social media presence. And one thing that I really appreciate is when you take these people out, you know, the first thing you say, I had the pleasure. Because really and truly, I mean, you get to spend a lot of time with these people, and I admire the way you approach that, brother. You really, you know, you really show a lot of respect to these people.
Well, Greg, it is a pleasure. You know, it's been my dream ever since I was a kid to go fishing every day of the week. And I was a registered nurse for 23 years. I still am a nurse, but I'm okay. My license is still current, but I got the opportunity to go fishing every day. And you're talking about just a lifelong dream. So for me to say it's a pleasure to take these people fishing, that is the absolute truth, because I wake up every day happy to go do it.
And you know, you can see that. You can see it on your social media. So that's good stuff. So give us some background. Were you born in Doverly? Is that where you were born?
I am a native of the metropolis of Doverly. My family has been in the Doverly area ever since it was settled in the 1800s. I mean, my family's been there that long. My family has a farm there. We have great deer hunting. My dad grows a nice garden. It's just a really nice place there in the country.
Now, you brought up deer hunting. That's how I met you. Yep. Give the quick synopsis of that hunt. Guys, you're not typical Wesley Miller. Go ahead and tell it.
No, I had the big one. That deer ended up scoring the fourth largest archery kill of whitetail in the state. And the first two times I tried to draw my bow back on him, my arrow fell off the string. And the third time I finally got it drawn back, I was able to make a good shot and killed him. And he was just the biggest 12 point. I mean, just the biggest, prettiest deer I've ever dreamed of killing.
Now,
I mean, it's a fantastic hunt
for the Boone and Crockett. I mean, Pope and Young.
He was 165 6/8 once he was scored and the deductions were taken off of him. I think he was 172 inches Boone and Crockett without any deductions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I scored him for Buckmasters a little bigger than that, but
he was 178 for Buckmasters.
Yeah. We don't do deductions. We take them green. That's straight. I mean, I could score him right in the dirt. So the shrinkage and whatnot like that probably made up for that difference. But
yeah, it's just they scored just a little bit different. It was still, you know, the buck of a lifetime. You know, I killed 172 inch with my rifle several years back, and I thought I'd never outdo that. And then when that one showed up on our farm, which we try to heavily manage best we can, it was just, you know, it was just a once in a lifetime chance. I'm glad I had the opportunity to hunt him. I was blessed with the opportunity. It was a great year of hunting.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you did your mom get you into fishing, or was it your dad? Because I know you like fishing with your mom.
I do love fishing with my mom, Greg. Ever since I've been able to walk, I have wanted to go fishing. When we had my growing up, we had a little pond about 200 yards in front of my house, and my mom would let me. I could swim, but when I was 3 or 4 years old, she's a school teacher. So when she would get home at 4 o'clock, she would let me go down there and stand at the pond where she could see me out the window. I had to stand in one place so she could see me out that window. But I stood there every day of the week. I mean, and fished with my little 202 or Zebco, and I fished and fished and fished. And that's just all I ever wanted to do. And my mom and dad were very instrumental in us fishing. You know, when I was growing up, you know, we lived on the farm. We had a bunch of ponds. They bring home a couple boxes of worms, and we go get supper, you know, go get some shiners, go get some perch. It's just something I've always done. I always want to do. And my mom and my dad both, they're very instrumental in getting me into fishing and going fishing with me. It's just, they've been a big part of it.
Yeah, I could tell. I think I met your mom. You guys came in K&M one morning while I was coming out, and she was with you. And you made it a point. To say
she's one of the best fishermen you'd ever meet. She can throw a bait caster, never backlash. I mean, she's really, really good, you know, as a fisherman. And she's always been a big part of my fishing life.
And I could tell right then that, I mean, just the look on you had a smile on your face. And I'm like, when I left, I remember thinking, man, this guy really likes to fish with his mom. That's really cool, man.
Sure.
So,
you know, and kind of like before all the live scope came out and all this stuff, I did all my crappie fishing. I live on Dorcheat Bayou between Doyle and the Sibley. It's a nice, beautiful little creek. All my crappie fishing was done out of a John boat with a paddle in one hand and a jig pole in the other. And used to, you know, the boat wasn't big enough for my mom and dad to both fit in. But every day, either my mom or my dad would come fishing. I'd paddle us up and down this creek and we'd catch perch, you know, and you know, I've spent a lot of time with both of them, white perch fishing and fishing in general over the years.
Yeah. Now, coming up in Doverly, did you play any ball or did you do anything like that?
Greg, when I was 5 years old, I was burned really bad in an accident. I was burned on a three-wheeler. I got hung up under it, and it burned me on, from the back of my head to the middle of my back. So growing up, I wasn't able to play a lot of sports. I played a little bit of baseball. I never was able to play football, anything like that. So that was another reason I fished a lot. You know, our family vacations growing up, they drug us all over the country in a camper trailer because my parents were school teachers. So we took every summer off, but every one of our vacations that they ever took us on, we went somewhere so I could fish.
Dude, that's awesome. So, see, I never knew that. I knew you were a big guy, and I'm thinking, truly, you know, a guy like this, he's probably an athletic guy. I didn't know that backstory on you.
I played a little bit of basketball in high school, but when I was 15 years old, I got in a car wreck, tore up my new to me Toyota four wheel drive, and tore my ACL and my knee up pretty bad. So that ended my illustrious high school basketball career. But other than that, I never played a whole lot of sports growing up.
Now, your early fishing, was it just your basic style crappie fishing, or did you fish for everything back then?
Oh, back then, if I could catch something at the pond, I caught it. We'd sit down there and catch brim, bass, crappie. I mean, I had a wagon we pulled behind the bicycle, and, you know, at the farm there, I mean, we're talking about an 800-acre farm. There was a dozen ponds on it. Mm-hmm. I could ride my bicycle to almost all of them. Or, you know, when I was even small, I was a little kid, my dad would take me to the other side of the farm where the big ponds were at, where my great-grandmother lived, and he would drop me off literally at daylight, and I'd either walk to my great-grandmother's house or they'd come pick me up at dark to come get me.
Wow.
I mean, but I'd go to my great-grandma's house for lunch because she was going to feed me a sandwich and some ice cream. So they knew I was well taken care of. But, I mean, my early days of fishing, I mean, like I said, that's all I've ever wanted to do. That's all that interests me. I mean, that fishing is, you know, that's, you know, I hate to make it sounds cliche when you say fishing's your life, but for me, it always has been.
Right, right. And it sounds that way. I mean, if you've got that much opportunity to fish, it would just automatically come naturally, I would believe, to sure. That's what you would gravitate toward. That's good, man.
Well, I like to say, like my jig time, when I was 7, 8 years old, my parents bought me a fly tying vise. Because one of the favorite places we would go was trout fishing in Arkansas. So, I mean, I was an avid fly fisherman at 7, 8 years old. They bought me a fly tying vise. I started making my own baits when I was a little kid. You know, really? So whenever I came, I really got back into crappie fishing about 15 years ago. I broke out my old vise and went right back to making baits.
Wow. That is cool, man. Do you have some of those old baits from when you were a kid?
I don't. They were all a bunch of little dry flies and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, back to my parents being school teachers, we didn't have an abundance of money, but I figured out if I could find a hook and a few bird feathers, I had a bait.
Yeah, that's true.
that's true.
Yeah, Lee. So, now, did you graduate from Dubberly High School, or where'd you go to school?
I graduated from Sibley High School. Dubberly didn't have a high school. Their high school shut down in 69, but I graduated from Sibley High School.
Okay, and then from there, you went where?
From there, I went to Southern Arkansas University to pursue my nursing degree. I graduated from there with a nursing degree in the year 2000.
Okay. So how long were you a registered? I mean, how long did you work in the nursing profession?
About 21 years, yeah. You know, full-time before I decided to, you know, try to give it fishing a go.
How hard was it to step out on that limb, brother? I know it had to be tough.
It was tough, but you go back to my social media presence. I had a lot of that presence before all of this came about because I was always an avid fisherman. I always put my bass fishing pictures, my pictures from South Louisiana. You know, everybody knew that I fished, I liked to fish, and, you know, we had that live scope for about almost a year before I ever took anybody fishing for money. So I've been putting pictures on Facebook for about a year before I ever took anybody, you know, try to do it as a, you know, a guide service. So whenever I was able to say, hey, I'm fixing to start guiding trips, it wasn't like I had to wait for people to book trips. The calendar filled up immediately.
Yeah.
Plus, I guided for a year, almost a year, every day I wasn't nursing. So I'd already built up a little bit of clientele. And you know, I knew I could, you know, I thought I could stay pretty busy. So, you know, to make that leap, sure, it was tough. You know, I stayed PRN for about a year, even after that.
you know, but luckily the transition was fairly easy.
You know, that's one thing I think I started really starting to see you about that time you made that transition. And I mean, I remember thinking, I think, man, this guy has really got a very good, strong social media presence. And I didn't even know that you were a nurse until I talked to someone who was a mutual friend of ours. And they told me, sure. Yeah, it's a, and I'm like, wow, that's, I never knew that. Never knew that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, how, I didn't exactly look like the nurse part.
No, I mean, I got to be honest with you, man. You don't. I mean, because I mean, I'll be honest with you. If I'm on the gurney and it's time to go under and I'm like, and I look up and I see you, I'll be like, I either this is you know, a male nurse or I'm seeing Jesus. One of the two.
Hey, I heard that. I walked by a room one time. I've heard them say Jesus. They were generally confused, but I've heard that before.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, man, you know, going back, I want to talk to you about your jigs. That's something I'm glad you brought that up. So how long is it you usually devote like a whole day, like if it's raining or you have somebody, you know, that cancels on you, you devote a whole day to those jigs, don't you?
I will, because I can tie about 15 to 18 an hour. So it's a very tedious process. I pour all my own heads. I'll buy 2,000 hooks, and I can go to my dad's house at daylight, and by about 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon, I can pour 2,000 jig heads.
Mm.
So I like to pour my own jig heads because I got a certain style jig head I want to use. I want to use a special. I got a really high grade hook I put in them, and you know, just my jigs are something. They're the same jigs I was using before the live scope and for my guide service and everything. And I knew I had something special even back then because I caught so many fish on them. That, you know, my jigs they're just, you know, I put so much. I say research and development into them. They've just so many hours of putting them in the water and seeing what works and what doesn't work. I've got it down to about 4 colors that I can take anywhere and catch fish.
Do you use any other stuff besides your jigs, or are you
the only other thing I use is I use Snacky lures in the 3 sizes they have. To me, they have the greatest profile of any plastic I've found. They are super durable. They're extra tough. I mean, they're just a wonderful bait. And that is literally the only thing I use besides my hand tied jigs.
Huh. Do you sell your jigs anywhere?
I do sell a few of them after my fishing trips. I'll sell them to my clients. I got a few people that come by the house and get them. But that's just one of those things that sometimes I don't have a whole lot of because, you know, we get into a drought situation, I may go a month or two without a rain day.
Yeah.
You know, and I may tie a few here and there just to be sure I've got some to take fishing. But, you know, when I've got extras, I'll sell them, but I just don't always have extras.
Yeah, so you're primarily running off your own inventory then?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, hey, when you come buy jigs for me, I break out my gallon Ziploc bag. It's got 8 little baggies in it of my 4 colors in 2 different sizes, and you're going to buy the same jigs, I'm going to take fishing with me the next day. It's not like I'm selling you any different ones. So, you know, that's just what I've got. When I'll sell you the ones right out my boat.
Man, that is really cool. That I mean, you're self-sufficient. You know, you're dependent upon yourself to catch fish through your lures. You know, I'm sure you have you know, the live scope and the rods and whatnot like that. But the main thing, the lure, is 100%. Or not, I'm gonna say 100%, but mostly going to come from you. That's pretty cool, man.
Sure, I think it is. I was talking to Hayden Jeffries one night right before the Washita tournament. We were out there in the yard. He wanted to see a couple of my baits. And when I broke out my tackle box, and it's literally one of those little bags, it's about 18 inches long, about 10 inches tall. He laughed. He goes, "That's your tackle box?" I said, "Yeah, that's the whole thing." He goes, "Lord, I don't know how you catch fish like that." So, I mean, it's, you know, I've got something figured out, and, you know, my little baits work, my little hand tie crickets work pretty good.
Well, you know, it goes back to what Chris and I were talking about, the last podcast I did. That's what you're confident in, and that's what you know, and you're going to throw it, and you're going to catch fish.
Sure.
That's something.
But, for my guide service, watching so many fish react to stuff and bite every day, I mean, it's just we're catching averaging anywhere from 40 or 50 a day, 5-6 days a week. Obviously, got them figured out on the baits and stuff.
Yeah. So now where?
There's no reason to deviate from that.
Right.
You know, when you got stuff figured, when you got something they're biting every day, There's no need in trying a lot of other stuff.
There's no need in reinventing the wheel. Just go with what's going. So
no, you know, and that's one of the things I think that's crazy with the crappie fishing, with the live scope and all, is everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel. The people that, that have been fishing with all these fancy electronics over the years, I hate to call them the old timers, but you know, in today's modern technology, they are. But their baits worked. They already had the colors figured out. They had the styles figured out. They had all that figured out. All you got to do is mix that with the new technology. You know, just when you marry that to the new technology, it's fairly simple.
Right. So how important is that technology?
Without it, I could come here. Without the live scope, I could come here on my home creek and catch all the little crappie I want to catch. But to go to these other lakes, it would be almost impossible to catch the fish like we do.
Hmm.
You know, it's just that they were that, and I hate to say we're dependent on the technology, but we really are, you know, for better or worse.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you guys look at Navionics. You're checking out the depths and the contours of the lake as well. So you probably already have spots narrowed down, right?
Sure. But whenever you can go down, when you can go to those spots and drop that live scope in the water in about 5 minutes, figure out whether or not you need to be there or not, instead of going around and wondering, well, is there a fish down there or not?
It narrows
it down.
That's
where you make the, that's where the big difference is.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about Big Sasquatch Guide Service. I'm impressed, man. I mean, you really, your social media presence, again, is strong. You do a really, really good job. You use social media for what it's intended for. So tell people how, I mean, it got started when? 2 years ago, you said?
Yeah, it's been about two and a half years ago.
Okay. And how many people do you think you average a year?
Probably 200, 250.
Wow. That's a that's a lot of fishing, man.
It is a lot of fishing.
Now, what waters do you hit?
I will fish anywhere from Darbone, on east to west. I mean, I will go fish Lake of the Pines, Lake Merval, Lake Erling up in Arkansas. I like Cross Lake, Red River, Grand Bayou, Cypress Lake, Lake Bistineau. And that's, I think that's about most of the ones I go to, but, you know, all those lakes are good at different, oh, Lake Claiborne, all those lakes are good. You know, some of them are better at certain times of year than others. So some of them I only go, really go to for a couple months at a time, but you know, that, I like to have a lot of options to have a lot of places to go. That way, you know, I don't wear out fish. I can always go somewhere and have some fresh fish to try to catch.
Yeah. How do the locals treat you sometimes? Do they ever, you ever have any trouble from locals that see you out there?
Back when all this technology first came out, I did get a dirty note on my truck at Lake, down at, Grand Bayou one day. But, you know, most of the time with the locals or with people, whenever, you know, I get that question asked a lot. What do you do when they're like, people ask me, what do you do when people get close to you? Well, the way I approach that is whenever a local or anybody that gets up close to me or whatever, instead of like trying to get mad about it, say, you know, you're too close to me or yada, you know, whatever, I'd use a different approach. I talk to them, ask them how the day's going. If they're not catching any fish, I offer to give them a couple of jigs, give them a business card. You know, I found that being nice to people and trying to help them to catch fish better, that in the long run pays off better to me than not being nice to people whenever I have the opportunity.
I like that approach, man. That's a good approach because you're not burning any bridges. You're keeping things open. You're keeping things jovial. I like that.
I mean, I get a lot, you know, what the old saying is, you can catch a whole lot more bees with honey than something else, you know.
With vinegar, yeah.
Vinegar, that's right. So that's just the way, and that goes back to my mom fishing. When we were kids growing up down at the beach, it never failed that we'd be standing out in the water just absolutely wearing the speckled trout out, and some lady would come wading out in the water and say, my husband was too embarrassed to come ask you what you were fishing with. So my mom would always get out of the water, go to the truck, give them a handful of baits, tell them what we're doing, and you know, and a lot of times they'd catch fish. And it was not just always to me, the better way to try to do stuff than to go other routes with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now, last year, you fished a really, really large tournament and did pretty well in it, right?
Yeah, so we had the crappie, the Wally Marshall Crappie Expo. It was on the Red River last year in the month of October. And my partner Justin Smart and I, we finished second in it. It was we won $40,000. I wish we'd have won that $100,000, but we didn't. But it was the best showing I've had in a national level tournament.
That's a lot of money.
It's nice.
I mean, are all crappie tournaments swinging around that kind of cash?
No, and that's the one good thing about the Wally Marshall tournament. He gives you the opportunity to win some big money.
Yeah, I'm telling you the truth. So now, that's the first time you've gotten to fish that tournament, right?
Yeah, it's the first time I'd ever qualified for it. We had to go to a qualifying tournament to be able to qualify for it. So that was how we qualified. And, you know, we're lucky to fish it and lucky to have such a good finish.
Well, that's good. So you're fishing it again this year, right?
We sure are. We're going to Table Rock this year.
Now, a lot of people vacation up that area. What have you done your research on Table Rock? You got a game plan going up there?
Yeah, we do. But the problem with the Table Rock is going to be the thing is huge. It is an inland sea. And the we've been told, now this is just going by the people that fish that, you know, the Crappie Expo tournament was held there 2 years ago. We've been told that we should expect a 60-mile one-way run to get to where we're fishing.
One-way, so it's a 120-mile round trip?
Yep.
Jeez.
Anywhere from 100 to 120-mile round trip.
They got a fueling station in between?
I don't think so. There may be. I don't know. I don't know if he'll let you stop and get fuel or not, but it's going to be a journey.
Isn't that the truth? Now, when is that come? When is that going to happen?
Man, this is going to be the second to last weekend in October.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to be interested in watching for that one. I want to see how you do, brother, because, it's a big lake. You know, it's one we always pay attention to when we go up. Well, it's beautiful.
The one thing that I have going for me in the Wally Marshall tournaments is he does not allow for the use of live bait. All the rest of these crappie fishermen are big time dependent on minnows, and I in my daily guide service never use minnows, and I try not to use them in tournaments. Mm-hmm. So I think that my good knowledge of how to jig fish is the reason why I do so good in the Wally Marshall type tournaments.
That's interesting. Do a lot of tournaments do that with no live bait?
No, but actually we got an elite series coming up for Crappie Masters just this year, and it's going to be artificial baits only.
Okay.
So I'm super excited about that too, because me coming from the unique background that I came from fishing, being a jig fisherman, you know, single pole fisherman my entire fishing career, that puts me at more of an advantage than the people that were tournament crappie anglers, say 4 years ago, that everybody was spider rigging. All these people that were spider rigging, they then had to try to learn how to jig fish. Well, they're still super dependent on minnows, whereas I'm not. So I'm hoping that's going to give me an advantage whenever the Elite Series gets here.
Yeah, the spider rigging, it always fascinated me to just look at, because I was like, how can one man fish that many poles? They got them spread out. You don't see it, I guess, because live scope came out. You don't see it as often. No,
that's kind of, it's still a very productive way to fish, but you know, whenever you're using a live scope and you can feel that thump on the end of your rod, man, that's where it's at. That thump, that's what gets everybody. When you're spider rigging, you see your rod bend over, you pick it up, you catch your fish.
Yeah. The live scope, I got to see it a couple of weeks ago firsthand. It's the first time I'd actually sat down and looked at it and had somebody point out the features to me. That is, that's impressive, man. That's some impressive technology.
Oh, it is. It's super neat. It really is.
So you think it's really changed the game though, right?
Oh, 100%, 1000%. It has changed it for sure. I mean, like I said, for better or worse, it has changed the way we fish and the way we will fish.
How does it feel when people, you know, kind of criticize, you know, when you're out there with that? How does it feel when people say, oh, you got that, you know?
I mean, you just gotta let that roll right off your back, because so many people have bought it, and until you take the time to learn how to use it, I mean, it's just not going to do you any good. So, I mean, probably 75% of the people that ever buy it don't know how to, never learn how to correctly use it. You know, to criticize it, you know, go out and use it. See how well you do with it before you criticize somebody for getting it and learning how to use it.
Yeah. One of the guys the other week, a couple weeks ago, was saying that it's a tool. It's nothing more than a tool. You still have to know where to find fish, how to get on them, and if they're not baiting, when to walk off.
Now, what I will say is that it has made the average fisherman a better fisherman, and the good fisherman great fisherman. But what I will say is that the state of Louisiana is going to have to make some changes at some point, and some limits, because I think with more and more people using this technology and getting this technology, I think we're hurting our crappie populations overall. And, you know, I just think that some adjustments need to be done to the limits in Louisiana.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up. I had some guy, and I'm not going to name his name, he knows who I'm talking about. He and I were talking one night, and he said, you got to look at it like this with fish. He said, fish in general. He said, it's just like anything else. The big will produce big. He said, so when you're keeping these big crappie, he honestly believes that keeping the big crappie hurt because you're taking that gene pool out of the water. What do you think?
I don't think that matters at all, because I think that enough of them, out of the millions and millions and millions of crappie eggs laid, are still going to end up big. They just got to get a chance to get big.
Got
to
get eggs.
And at the current way we're doing things, where we're got the limits at 50, they're not getting a chance to get big. I mean, sure, there may still be plenty of fish in the lake, but there's no big ones, because the larger fish are the ones that show up in the live scope best, and they're the easiest ones to try to target.
Right.
So some differences. Something's going to have to happen with the 50 fish limit. I mean, because you look at Texas, they got a 25 limit, 10-inch minimum. Their population seems to be doing good. I go to Lake of the Pines, Lake Merval. Those fish over there are great, big, big fish. You go to Mississippi, where you got a 15 fish limit and a 12-inch minimum, they grow giants. And here in Louisiana, we're behind.
Yeah, I think Grenada's got, like, what's it, 15? I think they do
15. 15-inch limit and a 12-inch minimum. So, yeah. Like I said, but when I tried to talk to a Louisiana biologist, I got told in the very nicest way he could all the reasons why I was wrong. Even though I'm somebody that looks at it every day.
Yeah.
You know, on a bunch of different lakes.
I think earlier this year in March, with the Crappie Masters tournament, they had a fish on Grenada that came in at 4.26, didn't they? Over 4 pounds?
Yeah, they had four of them weighed over 4 pounds.
That's crazy.
But in Louisiana, we don't have anywhere that's got the fertility of Lake Grenada. It has something to do with genetics, but the fertility of the lake is what makes those fish that big.
So talk to me about that. What do you mean the fertility of the lake? Tell a layperson.
The muddy water, that lake goes up and down because it's a flood control lake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's very turbulent water, and that's the ingredients you need to grow big white crappie. Muddy, turbulent water with lots of shad, lots of nutrients coming in from the, you know, that place grows, it drains, everything that drains into that's like crop fields and, you know, stuff that has fertilizer in it, you know, stuff that's that has nutrients. Now you take Lake Darby, for instance, it has the piney woods drain into it. You don't grow a tremendous amount of great big bucks. The fertility is not in the soil.
Right.
To grow those great big bucks. Same thing with your fish. I mean, all the stuff, it's all the same.
That's an interesting point. That's a very interesting point. So while we're on Grenada, you're talking about that muddy water. So when you got water like that, what kind of lure are you going to be throwing? What color?
You use the same exact baits. Crappie have those great big eyeballs for a reason. Those suckers can see way farther than you think they can, even in muddy water. I mean, they have excellent vision. They know your bait's there. So you really don't have to change too many things.
Okay. So coming in on this week, you expecting some big fish to come out this weekend?
Yeah, I think there's going to be some great big fish. I think probably about 17-pound sack, which is huge for this time of year, should be what you should be looking for both days. Hopefully I'll get it, but I think there'll be some big weights. We got some, the best fishermen in the country will be there. Those guys are great at catching fish. They'll post some big fish.
Yeah. And that's what I'm excited. You know, I don't know anything about it, but meeting you guys a couple weeks ago, kind of has me interested in paying attention to who does what and when. So if you've got a name, who's going to do the best, you think? Of course, Hayden, because that's his home lake.
Hayden Jeffries. Yeah. Hayden Jeffries will do the best.
Yeah, that's his home. I mean, he's solid.
I hope I win. I hope I do well. But if I had to put somebody to be in the one to watch, he's the one to watch.
So what is it about what Hayden's doing?
Hayden's got stuff figured out. The thing about tournament crappie fishing with live scope, you have got to learn how to move fast. You have got to, and the thing, the mindset you've got to keep is that you're only looking for seven fish. So after you've used live scope for a while, you can kind of gauge about how big a fish is before you try to catch him. And this guy will fish all day long to look at 10 fish. You know, he's not, and so many other anglers are catching every one of them just trying to find one a little bit bigger. He's not doing that. He is looking strictly for big fish and never stop until he sees a big one. And he is super good at it.
And he's I talked to him briefly. Really nice young man.
He is a wonderful individual.
Yeah, down to earth and just as, you know, nonchalant about it. You would never know. You know, Steve Adams told me, he said, this is the guy that's you know, setting the crappie world on fire. To talk to him, he just seems like the just an average guy. You know, he's not full of himself or anything.
He's very humble. I mean, he is. I had an opportunity to spend a good bit of time with him and for the last tournament, and has a really neat young man, and a lot of fun to fish against him.
Well, we about wrapped up our time, Wesley. You want to mention some sponsors for you? Give them a little bit out there.
Yeah. Well, we're going to look at Big Sasquatch Outdoors, Iron Oak Energy Services, Blazer Services, ACC Crappie Sticks, Carzone USA, Merrill Lynch, and Snacky Lures.
Okay. All right. Well, look, brother, man, I appreciate you taking time out of your evening. I know you're getting ready for this weekend. I wish you all the luck in the world, and I'll be paying attention to you for sure.
Thank you, Greg, man. It was great talking to you. Would love to do it again anytime you get a chance.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you.
All right, brother.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. All right, guys, well, you heard from Wesley Miller. Man, it was a good interview. I appreciate you, Big Sasquatch, for taking time to come in this evening. I know you're getting ready for Crappie Masters, and you still took time out of your day to talk to us. Man, one thing to take from the Wesley Miller interview is always have respect for others. Wesley has a great reputation throughout the area as a good guy because he always treats people with respect. He's never going to disrespect anybody, and anybody that comes along will say the same thing when they spend time with Wesley Miller. He's a good dude that's going to give you the shirt off his back. Congratulations on this great interview, man. I really appreciate you again. So watch for Big Sasquatch at the Crappie Masters National Championship on Grenada Lake this weekend. And as always, this is Greg Hicks. This is the Antlers and Hicks podcast. And I'm always going to encourage you guys to live your life past 20 yards. We'll catch you next time.